sabbatical. I'm not taking the full time that I could to talk to you today about all the distinctions for it. And I did take the time in my dissertation, my sabbatical dissertation, which is available on a website that I'll point you to in a few moments, where you can read more about that if you want to hear and read more about a theological and biblical foundation for the purpose of the Sabbath that is available. So the purpose of a sabbatical for ministers really comes to this in my mind. It is a renewal of the spirit of the minister. It is not really intended so much for you to go and study. It's not really intended so much for you to become, you know, the extreme John Wesley expert during the next 13 weeks of your life. I'm not opposed to that, but the real true sabbatical for the pastor is one that is needed for the spirit. If in the academy you take a sabbatical for the purpose of being a better scholar so that you can be a better student, then it follows that if you're a minister and your purpose is to take a sabbatical, it is to refresh the heart and the spirit and the mind, but the spirit so that you can minister through the spirit into the lives of others. That is the natural flow of what the sabbatical can and should do. So for this purpose, it is the renewal of the spirit of the minister. The sabbatical is not study leave, and I think we've underscored that point for you. So what is the value of a sabbatical for ministers? When I was doing study on this in particular, it probably would be helpful for me to tell you that, and it is really sort of neat for me to have persons from the church where this happened. It was in late 1997 or 1998. I'm sorry, the years sort of slip away from me. But quite honestly, I was, and because we're here in the Nazarene community, I can share these things. I was pastor of a growing Nazarene congregation. I was the district NYI president. Bill Sullivan, who at the time was a leader, still alive, of course, and was leading something called the New Start Task Force. I had been appointed to serve on the New Start Task Force for the denomination. I was also a member of the Board of Trustees at Mount Vernon Nazarene College. I was also, we were also raising money at the local church for a new building that we were building. So can you imagine many more stresses in your life? A few years before that, my brother, who was my best friend, had died of cancer. And somewhere along that way, my wife and I adopted a little boy. So that's plenty of things to manage in your life. And one October, it was like an October time frame, because I remember we took our young son at the time to one of those, well, it was a Sunday afternoon. We'd had a friend day at the church, and we took him to one of these pumpkin places, you know, where you can do the pumpkin carving, and they had the mazes and the sorghum, tall grass, you know. And so we were going through there, and I'll remember it was as if just like a cartoon happened where those sorghum grasses just grew like it felt like to me, like they grew right up around me. They just shot 10 feet in the air, and they just encompassed me. And I didn't know what was happening to me, but I felt like I couldn't breathe. And what was happening was that I was having a panic attack from too much anxiety, too much stress, too much happening in my life. And I had pushed every button of the burnout factors in my life were being pushed very far. So it just so happened, and this is where you know it's a God thing, it just so happened that that night we had invited a man by the name of Tim Butler. I don't know if some of you guys remember Tim, but Tim was a psychologist in the Toledo area, and he was to be the speaker that night at our church. The Lord knows that I would have never gone to speak to a psychiatrist or a psychologist or any kind of counselor. It just wasn't in my manly personality to ever do anything like that, because I didn't need that kind of help. I was going to press on by the strength and help of God. And the truth of it was, he said, why don't you come see me in my office tomorrow, and we'll see if we can't get some help. My district superintendent came, and within a few hours, that church board graciously and lovingly helped me into my first sabbatical, although we called it medical leave right then, but it was necessary because I had burned out. I had burned out. I had stretched myself too far, too thin. It's also called compassion fatigue. That may be a better name to call it, but that's another word that's used. You just give yourself too far, not enough seasons of rest. And so as a result of that, I learned a very valuable lesson. Number one, that the church can do something remarkable and redemptive for its pastors. And I am in the ministry today because a congregation said, Phil, take all the time you need. Bill, you may have even been on the board when that happened. Take all the time you need, and you know that Christmas bonus that we usually give you? We're going to go ahead and give it to you now, and we're going to give you another Christmas bonus when Christmas comes around, too. We want you to reconnect with your family, and you come back when God's ready to have you back. And I'm telling you, just those words, and that little bit of affirmation helped me over a very difficult time in my life. I'm getting a little emotional thinking about it right now as I think about how good the church was to me, and they did the right thing at the right time. I didn't feel worthy, but that wasn't the issue right then, and God has helped us. And as a result, I became something of an advocate for this idea that you don't have to go through burnout, and you can get to a better place, and you can have a healthier life, and if there are some seasons of break and rest and renewal that you can weave into this, then you can find some help. So as a result, this kind of passion that I'm telling you about ignited in me a desire to study, and I did a dissertation at Asbury Seminary, and I interviewed 30 Nazarene pastors who had successfully completed a sabbatical, and then they had returned back to pastoral ministry, and I wanted to find out if the sabbatical for them had been helpful and a few other things. And so one of the things that we wanted to talk about was how it might impact these precursors to burnout. And here they are. These are the factors that lead toward burnout in ministry. Work overload, lack of control. You ever felt like that in ministry, that you can't control a situation? Insufficient reward. Just think about the pension plan. That'll help you. That'll help you think about it. Breakdown in community, so-and-so's not talking to so-and-so, and usually you'd be good with that. You could help them pull it together, but now you just don't have the energy to go fight that battle anymore, and that's where you're beginning to feel that absence of fairness. I mean, most of us can live with the low pay, or maybe it's not the best community in the world, or maybe not the best place or the best house, but if there's a sense of fairness, they're doing the best they can, they're trying to help us out, you can overcome it. But when you begin to sense that that's going away, that is a precursor. And then conflicting values. Obviously, if you're in a situation where there's the leaders and you are in conflicting value situation, that's going to have a deep impact on these precursors toward burnout. And you can be at a high level of one of these, and maybe one of the others are at low levels. It's when they all start sort of working together, and then before you know it, you can be significantly impacted. But what if we could minimize these and help people get to a place where they're not burning out as soon? And I think that's why I have some passion about this. So the value of a sabbatical for ministers for me is that, number one, it can do this minimizing impact of precursors on burnout. And in my study, I asked these Nazarene pastors how this had worked for them. And we asked them how they were feeling about it before and how they felt about it after. And in every case, the sabbatical didn't necessarily change any of the circumstances of where they were, but it helped them get a better understanding of these precursor items that were affecting their life. So we thought that was helpful. And in many cases, it actually, the very fact that they were able to talk about a sabbatical in the context of their ministry setting, like I talked about the affirmation that I received from the church where I was pastoring at that time, that alone became a very affirming thing that helped solve some of the issues that some were feeling. The second thing is that it increases tenure in ministry. When I interviewed these 30 pastors, I asked them a question: if you had not taken a sabbatical, when would you have stopped doing ministry as a local pastor? And when we added up all the years that they said, you know, they would have stopped, but now they're willing to go until a new age, if you added up all the years, those 30 pastors, it amounted to 40 additional years from that group of 30 pastors. Now, 40 additional years may not seem like a lot, but with the average lifetime tenure of ministry of a pastor in the Church of the Nazarene being just a little above 10 years, because some start later in life and some get in and find out it's not for them, with the average tenure being just a little over 10 years, this is like adding 4 ministers in the life of the church. So there's a significant value to us as a church if we look at extending the life of our ministers and extending their tenure in ministry. And it does even help, including the local context. It does two things. It helps pastors be pastors longer, and it helps pastors be pastor in that specific place longer. But I'll be honest to tell you, it does not guarantee that you'll stay where you are longer, because some people take a sabbatical and realize, well, really, this isn't where God has me. He really needs me someplace else. There is a renewed passion for the work. I just came off a sabbatical about 6 weeks ago, and one of the things that was so great about being on the sabbatical, even as a superintendent, was that coming off of the sabbatical, about 4 weeks in, all of a sudden, I woke up that morning and I was thinking, I love this job God's given me. I can't wait to get back out on the road. And most of the 6 months before that, I'd been saying, I don't know if I want to do this anymore, and I'm so tired of traveling. But you understand what I'm talking about. There is a sense of renewed passion for the work that you have when you're able to distance yourself a little bit from it, disconnect from the passions that are tying you up and connecting you to it. A renewed vision for the future, and you have greater clarity and focus. Because you're able to think better, you're able to focus better, you're able to bring better clarity and better vision and better ability to lead as a result. Some of the things that some of the pastors who took the sabbaticals would say to me were things like, well, if I'd have known I could have had a sabbatical all along, I would have been having these regularly because this is really helping me. And now that I know that I can take one, I'm going to keep on doing this for a lot longer. There's something about life and health that comes alongside of it. So there's greater clarity and focus. It is a break in routine that leads to change in behavior. Here's a question that I like to ask people that are taking a sabbatical or have just come off a sabbatical, and that is, of all the things you stopped doing during the sabbatical, what is at least one or two of those things that you're no longer ever going to do ever more in your life? You know, you're done doing those, that you handed them off, and now you're not going to pick that particular mantle back up. Because probably through the years of ministry, we've picked up things that we maybe shouldn't have been carrying or shouldn't have been handling. And so one good question is, here's something I'm no longer going to do. Here's something I'm going to stop doing because God's raised up somebody else to do this in the life of the church. And then engaging the call to ministry, I would say 70 to 80% of the pastors that I talked to, part of their response was, I couldn't wait to get back to pastoral ministry because through the sabbatical, I discerned that this is indeed what God called me to do. Many people talk about how they went back and reflected on, yes, this is what God called me to. I went back to the time. I went back to the place. I could remember when God called me, how God called me. And yes, that's clearer today than it's ever been. And so that's very important in the life of the value of a sabbatical for minister. Look at those, just if you look at those particular points, how those reengage. And I think a lot of those things happen in the life of Jesus when he took that time away from a very active in ministry sabbatical. Now, sabbatical polity. Here's the statement that's in the manual. I believe this is the current one. In order to encourage a healthy pastoral ministry and lifelong learning, remember that sort of thread is in there, of the pastor, the church board, in consultation with the district superintendent, should provide a sabbatical leave for the pastor following each 7 consecutive years of service in one congregation. The timing and duration of the sabbatical shall be determined in consultation with the pastor, church board, and district superintendent. It is strongly urged that the pastor's salary continue in full. There should be an amen in there somewhere. And the church board provide for pulpit supply during the sabbatical period. And many policies say, and also maybe a stipend, perhaps for expenses that may be related to the sabbatical. Also, some are doing stuff like that. This topic is to be addressed by the district superintendent. This is a new part right here, this sentence. This topic is to be addressed by the district superintendent as part of the church pastoral review process that would come after year 2 and again in year 6. And as a superintendent, that's one of the bullet points that we cover in the review. So it's now much more a part of the conversation that's happening. And sometimes I'll ask the pastor in advance. I'll say, do you want me to, you know, really address this? Are you ready now? When's the right time? Are you making plans for it? Sometimes I'm finding that I'm doing the education in that process, and it's helpful to have another voice come alongside. And then it goes on, materials shall be developed and distributed by clergy development office. And then at the bottom, it says, at the church board's discretion, such a program may also be implemented for a member of the pastoral staff. And so we're still learning on this process. We're still learning how it all can go together. So what are some keys to an effective sabbatical? These are things that I gleaned from talking to people who did it, all right? And I think you have the list, so let's go from here. Requires an understanding that sabbatical is not the answer to all the problems you have, and it is not the answer to all of your self-care needs. Yes, we do have some more handouts. Are we running out? Here, would you? Oh, there's some here too. Yeah. So if you say, well, I'll just wait till a sabbatical to start taking some time off, that may not be the best way to do this. You need to begin a practice of really taking care of yourself as well. And self-care is not a bad word for a Nazarene pastor. All right? Love is, you love yourself, you know, it's an important component here. Number two, I think a key and effective sabbatical requires having well-stated objectives. In my recent sabbatical, I had five very well-stated objectives. One of them was to have a complete break from the office, the phone, and email. Praise be to God. Now, you know how hard that is on day one and two and three of your sabbatical and day 20 and 27 and 30? It's very difficult. And I'll tell you that I did very well. I did not go to the office one time. I give myself an A- on the telephone. I took one phone call during the time, and it was sort of by accident, you know, sort of a habit. I just had my phone in my hand. I was going to go to the step of having a different phone number, but I just never took the time to get the different phone. But I answered the phone anyway, and it was something I could handle quickly, but I did take one phone call. But on the email thing, I have to give myself a B-, C-plus, where it got towards the end. I did good at the beginning, but got towards the end, and it just, there's got to be something in there I need to be reading. There's got to be something. So I did open up my computer, let the emails download, looked at the names that they were from, and realized, oh, these are all good people, and I just put it away. I didn't read the emails, but I did see what was in there, all right? But that's hard. It's a very difficult process. But if you will commit to that, there's something very powerful that happens. Now, you can't just go away. You have to put some plan in place for, okay, so who's going to handle questions? Who's going to deal with things? You have to put a plan in place for that. So having well-stated objectives. Another one of my well-stated objectives was the opportunity to rest. I committed to every day resting, sleeping 8 hours. Now, I can't make myself sleep for 8 hours, but I can make a plan so that I could rest every day for 8 hours. That was a privilege that I had during that 7 weeks, and I'd like to be able to go back to that, but it is not always that easy. But that was an example of some of the well-stated objectives. And I would just make one other statement about how simple these are, how simple these statements are, and how difficult they are to live up to. One of the other ones that I committed to at first was I did want to do something like a writing project. Cheryl and I have wanted to write a writing project, something like 30 days for pastors in times of crisis, like a devotional kind of guide, you know, because in the superintendency work, that's a lot of what we seem to be dealing with. We're dealing with people facing that kind of challenge. And so we had written down on the original plan that that's what I would do, that I would write a 30-day devotional during my 7-week sabbatical. And one of my very kind district advisory board members who reviewed my plan said, Phil, don't commit yourself to having to write a 30-day devotional. Why don't you agree to start a 30-day devotional? And if you get started, that's great. If you get it finished, well, you know, that'll be okay too. And you know what? It was very good that he did, because we got started, but we didn't get very far. And it was good that we didn't have that imposition on us because of the way the sabbatical played itself out. It requires communication. It requires talking with people that need to know. One pastor that I talked to, his sabbatical basically was like this. He talked to his district superintendent. He thought it would be a good idea. His district superintendent came and said, well, I think you ought to get a sabbatical too. So this happened on a Sunday night, when the district superintendent had come and met with him and the church board, And so the pastor was there, preached that Sunday morning. Nobody knew anything about a sabbatical. Preached that Sunday night. Nobody knew anything about a sabbatical. And by that Monday, he was on sabbatical. And that was the first time the congregation had heard anything about it, was when they came back to church the next Sunday. That is not an example of a well-communicated sabbatical. It requires a little ramp-up. People have questions. They want to know, well, why are you going to be gone? I don't get a sabbatical where I work. Why should you get a sabbatical? And so it's helpful to explain to people about the process and the resources that are available. A lot of times people want to know, well, what's going to happen? You know, who's going to preach? Who's going to visit? Who's going to check in? Who's going to do these other things? And so prepare and well communicate these kinds of things to folks in your congregation. One of the things that needs some communication, I think, is talk with the superintendent. And I do appreciate the fact that in Virginia, where sabbaticals are beginning to sort of be on a roll, a lot of our pastors have taken them and staff members are taking them. I'll get a phone call and a pastor will say, I'm getting ready for sabbatical. What can you help me? And we have tools and resources and can point them to it. But I do appreciate the phone call, because it sure would be nice to know, as superintendent, it's nice to know that one of the pastors is gone or not gone for a few weeks. Talk with key leaders, with the congregation. And then what is the reentry plan for the pastor and for the congregation? I think it was Jaron Rowell, who was a pastor at Shawnee, I think, when he did this. When he took his sabbatical, the congregation got one too. They just sort of tweaked the calendar back a little bit. They quit doing so many things that were in the calendar. And they all just took a little breather and just rested a little while and let the Lord speak to them. So there's value in that as well. And the reentry plan idea is, do you come back on Monday and are you back to full time? Or as in the case where I took the medical leave, I took some half days at the beginning of my time back, and perhaps that's necessary too. Or even one more thing is, how important is it that you have some opportunities for the congregation to hear about what went on in the life of your sabbatical so that they can rejoice with you in it? And then the last one I put, requires communication with family. Hello. But I think it's good if you're married to tell your spouse that you're planning a sabbatical and let him or her have some input in what would be good or helpful. So when I put my plan together, I kept writing it in mind for the district advisory board to see it so they could approve it. But I kept remembering, well, Cheryl probably needs to be in on this too, and I wish I had been smarter and gotten her in the process a little earlier, but it's a learning process to do. I figured she would approve whatever I put down, but that wasn't a very fair assumption on my part. She needed to be a part of that conversation as to what would make it effective. And one thing that happened, this was by coincidence on the family side of things, one thing that happened was that our son, who's 17, and very active in the local Nazarene church there. But many weeks, he would have opportunity to travel with us. Now, this is unique to the superintendents in that we're traveling all the time, going someplace different. And so there have been many weekends when, for one reason or another, John needed to travel with Cheryl and me. And so we would say to him, we're going here and you're going with us, you know, sort of tell. But on the sabbatical, we were able to say to John, is there any place you'd like to go this week? And so he had the opportunity to say, well, I have friends that are over here in Charlottesville. Can we go to Charlottesville? You know, so we took the hour drive and we were able to connect with some of his friends. And it gave him some ability to speak into that season of renewal and brought us closer together as a family. More keys to effective sabbatical. The length of tenure is 42 to 91 days. Are you finding anything different about that? Is that the same range? I would suggest that 42 is about 5 weeks, right? Is that how that works? 5-6 weeks, somewhere in that range. I've heard of people taking 4-week sabbaticals, but my personal experience, and I'd like to sort of take a quick poll of those who've taken them, it really takes about 2.5-3 weeks before you really do disengage and you really begin to enter rest. Am I right on that, brother? Are we're in agreement? Okay. So if you're only going to take a 4-week sabbatical, I'd say wait a year and add a week to it somehow if you need to, because it really is important to have it long enough that you really do want to come back. You're really eager to come back. You're not just finally getting to the resting place. It must not be overscheduled. One pastor sent me his plan, and he was planning on reading 13 or 14 books. And he's an avid reader, but But he was going to do it in about 6 weeks. He was going to be on this pace to read all these books and all these other things. And I just said, I think you just have way too much. Ron and I were talking about this earlier, that others we've seen, it's just you have big plans for this period. You're going to conquer the world in this period. Don't go there. Just simplify, simplify, simplify. Make it very simple and easy. An effective sabbatical imposes no financial hardship on the pastor or the church. And it's rooted in a connection to the local parish, in that the people need to be able to celebrate this with you. And it comes through the church and is blessed by the church. And I think an effective one is also understood as, you know, it's this cycle. The seventh day, the seventh year, the Jubilee year. There's this kind of concept of this repetitiveness that's built into it, seasons of renewal and rest. On the resource page that I want to point you to in a few minutes, there is a website, there is a policy that one of our churches in Virginia uses where they have a very proactive sabbatical policy that I think is every 4 to 5 years they encourage their pastor to take a season of renewal and rest. So people are even going faster than the seven-year period. And it involves intentional opportunities for spiritual renewal. If I could talk about this one for a moment. I just believe that since it is for the spirit, it is for the heart of the pastor, that there should be some pretty intentional ways to renew the spirit. Now, that sort of makes sense, but I don't want to overlook this in conversing about it. We made a plan for worship. Now, I think it's difficult to go back into a situation where people know you for your responsibilities. And so you have to find other ways to worship, you know. We actually visited a couple of non-Nazarene congregations because no matter which Nazarene church was in my area, I was the district superintendent there, and I was going to be introduced as such if I showed up there. And so we had to make a careful evaluation of that, but we did worship. We wanted to worship. We wanted to keep that practice of worship going during that period of time. To me, it's never been about being in a worship setting that caused me difficulty. That actually brought me lots of joy. It was dealing with the people before and after that gave me some heartburn. And so when I went into situations when there was no heartburn going in and no heartburn going out, it was very joyful and very much pointed to the Lord. And the other thing that we did is we didn't leave this to chance. One great thing that happened for Cheryl and I on this particular sabbatical was that we selected a resource. It was a book of sermons by a man who was pastor at Moody. And right this moment, his name escapes me, but Redpath, I think, was his name, Redpath. And it was a book on sermons that he preached on the book of Joshua and the victorious life. It was really about the sanctified life, from a little bit of a Reformed tradition, but I thought the guy preached some pretty good sermons in there. And part of our practice during this sabbatical season, and we did it 3 or 4 times a week, was to sit down together, and we took turns reading a page or two out loud. And so we had this spiritual renewal time that came as a result of this reading practice that we incorporated into the sabbatical. It became like a very personal husband and wife worship time that we enjoyed during the sabbatical for several days of the sabbatical. So that was a very intentional opportunity to renew in our spirit. And then it involves periods of intentional physical rest. And I think I've already mentioned that, how important that is, taking time to actually rest and renew. It provides opportunity for emotional recovery by a long-lasting break from routines. And here's some questions that have to be asked. If dear sister so-and-so, who's been sick, passes away, or maybe she hasn't been sick, but she's the matriarch of the church and you're on sabbatical, do you want to know? And who is the person that communicates that with you? You know, on this last sabbatical, I had conversation with Rhonda Lawson in our office, and I said, Rhonda, if there's a death, one of the pastors, God forbid that it should be like that, or of a transition or something like that, I want to know. Call me. I want to be involved in people's lives. I don't want the sabbatical to put me in that kind of break. And what kind of updates are those kind of things? So those are some questions to ask. Another point of an effective sabbatical, it's an open door to improvements in significant relationships with family, friends, and congregants. this, I think, is key. The family gets first pick all of a sudden, and this is a great dimension of the sabbatical. Friends, you know, this is always the question, isn't it? Are we friends with our parishioners? How close are you in relationship with those? But probably you have friendships outside the local congregation that you can then really help to blossom during the season of sabbatical. Make an intentional trip to be with friends and to spend time with them. But actually, here's what I heard from some of the folks. They found out they really loved the people God had given them while they were away on sabbatical. They really did truly care about them, and they missed them. And when they came back, they were just really glad to be with them and see them and journey with them together again in a way that maybe they had almost forgotten as they were going off into sabbatical. It does require advanced planning. We talked about that a little bit already. Requires intentional schedule planning. You know, if you're going to make a decision about the sabbatical, what will I do for 7 weeks? How will this be different from a 7-week vacation? And are there different phases? I think that first week is very key. You probably better not put a lot of plan in there, but just disengaging from the activity that you've been involved with is going to be more difficult than you think. It really is a challenge to fully disengage, and you're going to have to work at that. So there are different phases to the sabbatical as you get ready to go back in reentry, and an effective sabbatical has an effective reentry plan. So you plan. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk to the people about it. We're going to tell them, help them celebrate how God had helped us during this time, what God did for me during the sabbatical, what God did for them during the sabbatical while the pastor was gone. Some of the churches found out they really did like this pastor, you know. They were really glad to have this pastor back. So here are some things. I think I have a couple of pictures here that might be helpful. These are these sabbatical planning tips. If you're going to really do a sabbatical, take a break. Buy some socks that are multicolored and take a break, huh? Just push that stuff to the side and really disengage. The only problem with this picture is the guy's still wearing a tie. I don't know what the deal is with that, but that's not advisable on the sabbatical, all right? I love this quote. Just like authentic Christian faith, sabbatical isn't about what you avoid. It's all about what you pursue. So there is the break, but it is about intentionally going into something that will bless your life, that will transform your life, that will cause you to be raised in your spirit. When you think about Jesus' breaks from ministry, they were about prayer and the Father. That's what they were about. I love this title of this book, Hurry Up and Slow Down. Huh? Don't you like that? Hurry Up and Slow Down. I've not read the book, but I can only guess what this book is about. We live in a world of hurry up, but there are some real reasons to slow down and to take these kinds of breaks. And you've got to be flexible. Not everything we hope to accomplish on our sabbatical, we were able to do. That 30-day devotional booklet, for instance, it didn't happen. We got 2 or 3 days written of it. But it was joyful to do that little bit. But we're flexible in the process because other things became important as we were going along. And I don't know quite how to put this one in there. Can you read that? Don't listen to the voices in your head. And if I was trying to make this work, but I couldn't quite get the picture to come out right. But actually, what I want to say is there's really sort of two voices. There's sort of, now you're going to think I'm schizophrenic or paranoid or something, but I do think there's voices that you'll hear. And some of the voices are, you know, don't do this. And some of the voices are, do this. You know, you're going to hear conflicting sort of voices telling you what to get with and give up and do and not do. And I think it's important that you give some ear to some of those voices and a way to express them, but don't listen to all of them. Some of them you just have to turn a deaf ear to. But there are some voices that will speak to you that will be quite helpful, and some come from your own spirit, your own heart. And then there is some sense of accountability. There is a self-accountability. In the end, at the end of your sabbatical, nobody's really going to ask you the question, did you really stay away from email? Did you really stay away from the phone? Did you really disconnect from the office? Matter of fact, at the end of the day, you're just going to have to be the one that owns up yourself to whether you did this or not. And so there's a lot of good holistic self-accountability that's drawn into this kind of thing. And if you really want a good sabbatical, you need a good process. And one thing that I would recommend in this process is to develop some routines of things to do and not to do during that time. Some positive things to do, like the reading or the prayer times, or keeping the evenings free for family times, those kinds of things. And then finally, one of the things that I practiced this time that I really wasn't planning on, but it just sort of developed as the sabbatical got started, was the idea of journaling. And I did not journal every day, but I probably journaled 80% of the time. And it was really very helpful and very engaging to me, as I just took a little book and would write just a prayer or a thought or something that I felt was pertinent to that day. Was a very helpful process in the sabbatical planning. So remember, go placidly amid the noise and haste, or better yet, avoid the noise and haste altogether. All right? That's our reminder about what sabbatical can be. So we'll just leave that picture up there. And let's see, what time does this seminar conclude? About now? At 3 o'clock? Somebody else has this room at 3 o'clock? Is that right? 3:30. Oh, okay. So we do have 10 minutes then. Well, probably, if I've done a halfway good job at this, I've raised more questions than I've answered for you. That's my hope, is that I've raised some questions. And I probably don't know the answers. And one of the things I think about is the challenge. We have probably 70% of our pastors on the Virginia District are bivocational. And so they're having a very difficult time. When you start talking about taking a regular day off, that's already a problem. They're already dealing with a lot of struggle. Troy, you and I were talking about that a little bit. You want to tell us your situation real quick? All right. That sounds like three full-time jobs to me right there, you know. And and you're looking for ways to get some rest, aren't you? Yeah. 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 I think I'm all in favor of getting Troy a sabbatical. Say aye. You know, yeah. Well, I think I do think that that's a particular challenge that we're facing these days with people working multiple jobs, the economic realities of it. And you're pastoring a congregation of 120 or so, but still the economic reality is that there's need for another job. So that's a big challenge. Anybody have any good suggestion for our brother how to find another day in the week? Praise God. If there's something in our polity is that we offer it as a possibility, you know, we don't mandate it, but we are stronger and stronger in our language, and the practice of it is increasing so that it's beginning to be more a sense of mandate, and churches are understanding the value as they're hearing back the reports of longer-term ministry tenures and those kinds of things. So it is difficult to say, well, this feels like it's for me, but it really is for the benefit of the church. When you take a sabbatical, it's really for the good of you and for the ministry at large as well. Yes, Steve? Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had a couple of others that had sabbaticals. Ron? Yeah. Yes. Right. Yes. Right. Excellent. Excellent. We probably have some more to add to you because we have a short list of resources on the Virginia district as well. Yeah. All right. Great. Yes. Yes, brother. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it requires some education. I think I have used one of the most effective things that I've done so far in that area. In my dissertation, I talked with pastors about sabbaticals and the effectiveness of sabbaticals. So I think the witness of those pastors is the most effective thing that I've ever used. Those pastors saying, this saved me to ministry. It's in their words, and it's scripted. It's what they said. I actually transcribed it. I took it on tape and transcribed it. And on the resource I'm going to give you right now, that is an appendix in my dissertation. It's just one small chapter where I just pulled that out because I could see the value of just those statements. So I think there's 25 to 30, somewhere in that range. It's no more than 30, obviously. But I think 25 statements that pretty much it's pretty compelling evidence to people who are sort of saying, well, I don't get it. But part of it is an education on the dynamics of ministry, how different it is. And sometimes a third person coming in, a district superintendent, that's why we have it structured that way in our polity, can help with that conversation. Sometimes it's the witness of those who've been before and who can share it. So the resource that I want to point you out to, I don't have the exact web address, but if you look at on the front page, I have my personal email address, philip@vanas.org. And if you go to our website, vanas.org, and you go on the left-hand side and you go to the site map, just click on the site map, and you'll see down on the list of links one called Resources for Pastoral Sabbaticals. And in there, you will find the plan that I used for my most recent sabbatical. So if you want to know, well, how do I write up a plan? There's a sample plan of how to put that together. Number two, there is this appendix that is there. The whole dissertation is there. But best I know, there's only three people that have read it. My dad, me, and one of my professors out of the three on the committee. Okay, so there's only three people that read the whole thing. So you don't have to read the whole thing. Just go back and read that. And also the article from Eugene Peterson is helpful to people who are having a question about why do pastors need this. They don't really have an issue with the academy having it, so this is not such a bad conversation to bring into the life of the church. So those are a couple of resources to help answer that question. Yes, Ian, and then our brother. That's a good question that churches ask, and I have a church where I most recently did a review, and their memory is that the last time they gave a sabbatical, that pastor left. He used it as a time to interview. We have an integrity issue that we need to maintain as pastors. I don't think we should use it for that purpose. So I think that's an expectation. I don't know where that's written. But second of all, I would say that one of the policies that is listed on the page that I referenced, the one on the resources for pastoral sabbaticals, talks about a financial return of funds if you leave within a certain period of time. One of the churches has just written that in to address that concern. And I think that's fair. I think it's fair. I don't think it's a huge penalty to them, but basically the cost of the period surrounding the sabbatical, you'd have to reimburse the local church if you took off within so many months after that. I think it's because it engages the conversation. I was going to have our brother, then one here, and then one back there. Good. Yeah. 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 Praise God. Right. Amen. Praise God. And I would just add, my passion for studying the thing came out of my own experience of a burnout. That was part of the reason why. But the whole reason, I think, for the purpose of sabbaticals is exactly what you underscore. We don't have to get there. There is a better plan. The sabbatical plan helps people not have to get to those places of nearly walking away from ministry. Right here and then back there. Yes. Yeah, good question. I don't know if you heard the questions, but the one statement was that in one sabbatical that a pastor of theirs had, he basically told them on sabbatical that one of the purposes of his sabbatical was to pray about whether he was staying or leaving. All right. Now, that goes back to one of the points we talked about. It's well communicated, all right? I guess that's okay if that's part of the expectation that's created. But second of all, the other question was, if the average stay of a pastor is 3 to 4 years and you don't get one until a 7-year period, how does that work? Well, some places have said, well, we're going to give it to you in your 7th year of ministry wherever you are. And as a superintendent, when I'm talking with folks about this, that's what I try to encourage, not necessarily just 7 years in one place. But in the book that's a little bit dated now, it's probably about 10 years old or maybe a little bit more, Dan Spate, I believe, or is it Will? Dan, I think, is the doctor. He says that moving is a pseudo-sabbatical. Pastoral moves, you know, because you get the last 6 weeks are really pretty good, and the first 6 weeks at the new place are really pretty good. So there's 12 weeks, and there's your sabbatical, all right? So a move can be like a sabbatical, but what if you could have a move without moving? You know, that's really the idea behind the concept of the sabbatical. Have 6 weeks here, 6 weeks there, and in the end, you don't have to move. Praise God. And that's not helps a lot of starting and stopping and a lot of the mission of the church to keep going forward. So, yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Our brother here had his hand raised. Yes. Yeah. Good. She needed it too. Good. Excellent. And that brings me to one other thing I want to say, and then our brother here. For you, the sabbatical wound up being a going away. For me as a superintendent, what do? I go away all the time. That's what I do. So my sabbatical was a stay at home. And I stayed exactly at home and slept in my own bed almost all the time. Okay. You did have that. Okay, yes, brother. Yeah. I think it's important to create the boundary. I don't know that you have to go. But if you stay, then you need to be honest with yourself as you're planning it. Can I really disengage? Well, that's a big question. You know, if you live right next door and people knock on your door to get the key to go in, you better go. That's what I'm thinking. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, part of the reason why I'm passionate about it is that I hope we create a new conversation about it in the church. And I would just add to your statement that I hope I don't have to deal with this for a long time. I would just turn that right back around and say, why not? Go ahead. Let's start talking about it now. Why don't you go ahead and start planning your first one after 6 or 7 years in ministry? And let's see how far that extends you and expands the influence of your ministry as a young pastor. You know, we had the notion, you know, there was an old song we used to sing, let me burn out for Jesus, you know, something like that. Let me burn out for thee. I think that was the thing. Now, I know what that meant. It meant, you know, be used up for God and the purpose. But now we can't sing that song anymore because of the connotation of burnout. But what if we had the proper periods of rest and renewal built into the life of ministry? Why not? Why not from the first day? That's a part of the DNA for every pastor. If you read some of these resources like Time Bomb in the Church or Pastors at Risk, which is another great resource, the Alban Institute has tremendous resources on clergy self-care. If you want to get some resources there. The Point Loma Center, with Ron's expertise, he had to leave, but they have tremendous resources. And we're trying to develop more of them in the life of the church as we're learning more about this process. So I would say, and I want to go to one other question. You say you rely on your DS. Well, I am the DS where I was, but I got a sabbatical in my context, and I didn't have the general superintendent come and have the conversation. I was in the meeting with the board, and I shared with them my concerns, some of the burdens I was carrying. And I think I was this close to saying, I think I'd like a sabbatical, when one of the board members said, I think it's time for you to have a sabbatical. You know, so in that case, it was a conversation that I brought to the table, but then they responded appropriately. You'll find that if you educate people on our district, in the Virginia district, it's part of the finance committee report of the district assembly. I know this may seem like really old-fashioned, but the Finance Committee report, it says right in there, is supposed to be an item on the agenda at every local church in September or whenever. Well, there's good reason for that, because then it engages these points of conversation. And so that opens the door for other conversation. You don't even have to force the door open. You can just say, here it is. And if you are on the Virginia District, and I'll talk to you after if you want, but on the second anniversary of your review, and the fourth anniversary, the sixth anniversaries, that's a part of the conversation. We're going to have that conversation, even if you say to me, I don't want to take it right now. I'm going to educate the church board. So that's something new that's developed since the last General Assembly, so in 2009. So we're having these conversations a lot more. It should be becoming easier for pastors to do this. And as we get more experience with it, I think we'll become better at it in terms of creating good breaks, letting people get back into the ministry. And well, just again, I don't want to go all the way back to the first point I made, which was we don't take the Sabbath to become more productive. Remember, we made that comment? So I don't think you just take the sabbatical just to become more productive. But I do think that because we take the sabbatical, we become more of who God intends us to be, because our connection to Him is better and stronger. Okay? How are we doing on time? Ooh, we're late. So thanks so much. Good to be with you. God bless you. Enjoy the rest of the conference.